It's Tuesday, it's the 23rd of March 2021. It's Jim, it's the world of bonds. This is for professional investors only and never investment advice. US Treasury bond yields back down again a little yesterday. They're at 1.7%, so only 5 basis points off the highs. There were new highs though for break-even inflation rates yesterday, especially at the long end, so we got to nearly 2.3%. for the 30-year break-even inflation rate. So expectations of average inflation over that entire 30-year period now at 2.3% as measured by bond markets. Lots of action going on in emerging markets and in particular in Turkey. As you know, a couple of days ago, the governor was replaced. We've now got the fourth governor in Turkey of the central bank since 2019. This one was sacked because he hiked interest rates. And in fact, we had Brazil, Turkey and Russia hiking interest rates in emerging market land last week. Markets did not like the sacking of the governor, so the lira collapsed yesterday. And the bonds too. So if you look at the Turkish bond market, at the short end, yields are up 300 basis points. At the long end, bond prices down 12 points, and that was 150 basis points widening in spreads there. Closed a little bit better, maybe 50 off those wide prints that we got to, but still a very bleak day for Turkish assets in general, including their equity markets and including some of the European banks that are perceived to have significant Turkish exposure in any way. Today, I want to talk about quantitative easing and money because interesting article in the Times on Saturday, Philip Aldrich, article in his column called Managing the UK's Rising Debt Bill Will Require Coordination We Lacked in 2008. He's the economics editor of the Times, and he was talking about something that's really come back into the thinking of bond fund managers in the UK in particular over the past couple of months. This is a very much a hot topic, a topic of interest, and really goes to show you that whole ideas around quantitative easing and how money is created and how reserves work and all of those sorts of things are not well understood. There probably isn't even firm answers or definitive answers in many cases around this whole topic. But in this article, Philip does go through some of the issues that are tormenting us at the moment in bond land. And I remember writing in 2012 that there was a chance that the gilts that the Bank of England bought in quantitative easing would effectively be cancelled, that we'd have a big debt cancellation, and as a result of that, our debt to GDP ratio would shrink dramatically back to levels that wouldn't concern anyone even. And I think this was the first time anyone had ever talked about the prospect that the bonds bought by central bankers as part of QE would effectively disappear into the vaults and never be thought of, talked of, or seen again. Since then, you know, there's been a lot of talk about this, and there's also been talk parallel to this around MMT, the modern money theory, that kind of touches on the idea that debts can be disappeared in a sort of different way, in a way. But I think that in the past few months, as I say, the relationship between the debt management office issuing bonds, the Treasury and the Bank of England buying those bonds as part of QE and paying for that somehow has been come back into our thinking. So I'm going to quickly go through some of the things that Philip Aldrich talks about in the article, and hopefully it'll make things a bit clearer about what is actually happening when QE takes place in the UK. So first of all, let's make it clear that UK has got one of the longest maturity profiles in their bond markets of any major bond market. What I mean by that is there are lots of long-dated gilts outstanding. And this is historically been the case too. Our average maturity on our debt is around about 15 years, and that's because our pension fund industry, and particularly our defined benefit pension fund industry, is very mature. Our insurance sector, very mature as well. You know, you go back hundreds of years and people would be buying annuities and products based on those things. And that means that they need long-dated bonds in a way that countries with different formats of pension fund industries, including looking at defined contribution more rather than defined benefit, don't need so many long-dated bonds. And this may change for the UK as well, as all those all defined benefit schemes close down and reach runoff. But nevertheless, we've got lots of long-dated bonds out there. So the average maturity of our debt, 15 years, and that compares to about 5.5 years for the United States of America. And that's always given us a lot of comfort, because what it means is that bond yields can rise substantially, and those 50-year bonds that we've issued at very low yields will carry on being at very low yields for a long time. Whereas if you're an emerging market economy, or even the US, where you've got a very short dated debt maturity, if bond yields go up, those bonds will need refinancing pretty quickly, and you're going to be refinancing them at ever higher interest rates. So that's point one. UK has got a long maturity profile. But point two is that quantitative easing has changed that maturity profile quite substantially. Under QE, the Bank of England buys long-dated gilts, and it's been disproportionately buying longer-dated maturities. And as a result of that, it earns the coupons on those long-dated gilts, so it benefits in a way. You know, some of those coupons are 2-3% or higher, certainly. 30-year bond yields now above 2 still, despite everything that's gone on over the past few years. So long-dated gilts are the highest yielding area of the market, effectively, and the Bank of England, when it buys those gilts as part of QE, is going to earn those coupons. But it does have to pay for those, and that's point three. So the bank creates money. How does it create money? Well, it's not quite going to the printing press and pressing the button, but it creates reserves, and it has to pay for those reserves it's created. It has to pay for the money that will end up elsewhere in the banking system and comes back to it to sit in the reserve accounts at the Bank of England, and it will pay those at bank rate. At the moment, bank rate is 0.1%. So if we think about what's happening, it's creating money, reserves at bank rate. It's costing the Bank of England 0.1% to create those reserves, but the positive is that it's earning 2% and more on those reserves, effectively, well, on the money it's created, because it's used those reserves to buy QE gilts, which have higher yields. So pay 0.1, earn 2.5 or whatever it might be. The problem comes when reflation comes, and we hope it does come to some extent. We'd like some more inflation in the system. We'd like some more economic growth. All the good things that we've been promised when coronavirus comes to an end. But there might be a problem with that when reflation does come, the Bank of England will move away from what's effectively the zero bound down at zero. It doesn't want to go negative. It might do if things get worse, but effectively 0.1%. Is pretty much as low as it's going in this cycle, and as a result of that, we've got, you know, 900 billion of reserves, say, with 0.1% cost to that. If the bank rate goes up when economic growth returns strongly, the earnings we get from the QE gilts are stuck, because these are fixed rate coupons. These are coupons of 2-2.5-3%, whatever they may be. So there's no prospect, as the economy recovers, that those the earnings from the Bank of England gilts go up. They're stuck, but the costs of that, the reserves, are floating rate. So our liabilities are floating rate liabilities based on bank rate. Our assets are fixed rate assets based on gilt coupons. And, you know, to some extent, the gap between 0.1 and 2.5-3 is pretty wide, and we can cope with a few interest rate rises before we start losing money. But every time bank rate does go up, there'll be a cost to the taxpayer, effectively, through to the Bank of England, rather, through this mechanism. And if bank rate went up to 5%, obviously then bank rate is above the rate that we are earning on the gilt coupons. The overall result of this is that our maturity profile isn't actually anymore something like 15 years, but Phillips calculated it's more like 4 years, because we've effectively transformed our maturity profile by from fixed rate debt into floating rate debt. So a large portion of UK's liabilities are now in floating rate, with the liability being bank rate rather than those coupons at the long end. So far from having the longest maturity profile in the world, or one of them, we're now below that of many economies. Having said that, the US has also done QE, so the US's maturity profile is lower than 5 years now. But nevertheless, 4 years is not as comforting as 15 was. And that puts us at risk of rising bond yields in terms of the costs of quantitative easing, effectively. Rather, not bond yields, rather, but rising bank rate. There is an easy answer to all of this, of course, and you will have spotted it right away. And Charles Goodhart, the famous Charles Goodhart, said that you could simply have tiering of reserves. So you have reserves that you use to pay certain classes of people who have reserves at the Bank of England, so the banking groups, the building societies, whoever it may be, could earn interest on reserves at bank rate, but the QE money could be paid at zero or even negative, whatever it wanted. We're in Alice in Wonderland world here, effectively. So you could change the tiering of reserves, make the QE reserves effectively pay zero, no matter what happens to bank rate, and that kind of solves your problem. But these are all the thorny issues that the Treasury, the Debt Management Office, and the Bank of England are going to have to think about quite hard over the next few years, especially as bank rate rises. Have a good week. I'll speak to you later. Bye.